me tell you that. And you know, it's not so much the heat, is it the gosh darn humidity. And it, you know that, you know, when you sit there in the bed and you're just sweaty, you know, and you go to reach for the water on the nightstand and you slide right out of bed and the wife says, "Stop making so much noise, you're waking me up, go to sleep." Well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Times like that make me think about moving up north, you know.
Good idea.
Yeah, I'd do it too. Of course, then I couldn't watch the Packers, you know. The Packers are... Of course, I like the Packers. I'd do anything for the Packers. Who can forget Vince Lombardi, you know? Back in the glory years? Not me, boy. Well, anyhow. Getting to be that time of year. Eh?
Yeah,
I'm a deer hunter, how do you do? I got the deer hunting rapping tale for you. I'm so excited, it's my favorite time of year. I love to feast my buns, chasing trophy deer. But don't clap your hands to the stomping of the feet, cause yeah, he's like me, he can't keep a steady beat, no.
Come on, I guess get with the beat.
I got this great big knife, cause the hunting is my life. It's my chance to drink beer and get away from the wife. It's the boys' night out, acting stupidly. Say now, baby, baby, don't you think maybe how about you and me, yeah? Well, we partied all night, never made it to our bunks. And I was sitting in the tree stand on a tree day drunk. Wind was blowing 45, temp 30 below. I was freezing to death, then it started to snow. So I got down from the tree stand, start heading for the truck. And that's when I seen it there. The 30-point buck.
30-point buck!
30-point buck.
30-point buck. 30-point buck. 30-point buck. 30-point buck.
Well, he was 8 foot tall, weighed 12,000 pounds. With every step, there was a shaking on the ground. He was so rutiful, so beautiful. Strutted right out of my dreams. He was created by God, just for outdoor magazines. Now, I'm not much for thinking. No, I don't do it often, but I had an idea.
Yeah, what was that?
To put that 30-pointer right in his coffin. Yeah.
Get him there, Clyde. I believe it when I see you here, buddy.
30-point buck.
Couldn't get to my grenades.
Yeah, right.
The howitzer was in the shop. My stomach was tied into a monkey knot. Yeah, my only hope was Betty Lou. She was the one. A combination AK-57 Uzi Raider laser triple barrel double scoped heat-seeking shotgun. The women clapping in the back there, I gotta like that. Well, he would come in for me, getting bigger and bigger, but my fingers were so frozen I could not pull the trigger. I kicked off my boots, fired with my big toe. I was Dirty Harry, John Wayne, and G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe?
Yeah, that 30-point buck was only 10 feet away, y'all. Still, I couldn't seem to hit him, and he wouldn't run away. And after 20 minutes, when the smoke cleared, there were hunters on the ground in the world's biggest deer. Standing tall and proud, he looked at me and yawned, and then a flash of white, and
there he was,
gone.
Oh, it's all right, Clyde. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Well, seven men got up, and then one fell down. A big lump of blaze orange shaking on the ground. At first I thought he was one of the boys, but it was a no brother good in law of mine from Illinois.
Send him back on the next plane, you know.
Did you see the 30-pointer?
Did you see the 30-pointer?
Did you see the 30-pointer?
Did you see the 30-pointer? As we jumped into the truck, then I'm gonna get that
30-point buck.
Yeah, I'm gonna get that 30-point buck. I'm gonna get that 30-point buck.
30-point buck.
Dirty point buck. Yeah, I'm gonna get that 30-point buck. last thing I do, I'm going to get that 30-point buck.
All right, back again on Survival Punk Podcast is our great friend, Jeff Dimitri. Jeff Radke, welcome to the Survival Punk Podcast.
Thanks, James. I'm glad to be back. You know, that couch potato, what's his name? You know, he's not a very good co-host.
He has been slacking recently. He's not on this podcast because he was in Texas. So he was in Texas having Thanksgiving with his army buddy, Todd. So I just I slept pretty much. Normally we record on Saturdays, a little insight into the way we do things. And we put the podcast out on Wednesday, or I do. This past weekend, I basically slept all of Friday completely. And then Saturday, I was awake and I was hanging out with a friend of mine. And then it was sleeping again. So I basically slept away the entire weekend. So,
yeah, I'd done that before when I worked third shift. I got home at 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock in the morning, and I went to sleep and I woke up and it was like 5 o'clock, and I'm like, oh my God, it's 5 o'clock at night. I slept away the day, and then I looked at the clock and it was a.m. I'm like, oh my God, I slept 24 hours almost.
Nice. I've done that, and it's you either wake up one or two ways. You either wake up feeling like $1 million or a train hits you. There's no there's no middle ground. Like, you're either like best night ever or I want to die.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I set my alarm clock this morning, get up, take my kid to school, I looked and I'm like, 1 hour and 54 minutes before I have to get up. Oh, that sucks. So yeah, I've had no sleep either. I'm going to go back to sleep though after the podcast.
Yeah, me too. Just speaking of not sleep, on Thanksgiving, I was up for 28 hours.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Yeah, I was running on pure caffeine, and I was loaded up on adrenaline. I hit the bed, and I was out. But you're not on the podcast today to talk about sleeping. You're on here to talk about hunting, which you just did as well.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing you got to understand about hunting before we even start. Where I live, it's a religion. You know, you know how people from Indiana are known for basketball, where that's like their thing. And you know, we have the Packers and stuff. But I'll tell you what, around where I live in northern Wisconsin, they cancel school for the week of Thanksgiving because kids just don't come to school. How much deer hunting is a religion here. Like further down south, southern Wisconsin, they don't do that. But up in the northeastern part where I live, yeah, they just cancel school for the week. They give you another vacation just because, you know, half of the students won't be there.
Right.
Even the elementary school's canceled.
Oh, wow.
My daughter was off all week too with me. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, around here, it's a big thing. And then all the people that come from the south up here because, you know, there's more land up here. But, yeah, that's, you know, that's, there's all different types of hunters. And, yeah, you know, I figured I'd get that out of the way first, is that deer hunting is basically here a religion. It's, everybody waits for that one week a year.
Oh, my God. That one deer.
We have bow season and stuff, but well, actually, this year we could have two deer. If you're in the southern part of our county, you could get a doe, and if you were in the northern part,
oh wow,
you could get a buck. Well, you could, in the southern part, you could get a buck and a doe, and in the northern part of the county, you could get just a buck. Luckily for me, it's divided by a highway, and my parents own land on both sides.
Awesome. So there you go.
Right. So this year I ended up shooting a doe in the southern part of the county, which is on the other side of the road, basically.
Nice. I've seen so many deer crossing the road recently. I just kind of want to gut it and just take one out. So they're being pretty dumb about hiding down here. Maybe it's the fact that really it's not been super cold. We had two nights of like 20 degree weather, but besides that, it's in the 50s today, I think, and it's been warm all week.
Oh, this morning when I took my kid to school, I looked at the thing in the car. It was 28 this morning.
Oh no, it's this. God, yeah, it's in the 50s today already. So a little bit warmer.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's jump right into it. I've got a couple questions. I'm actually planning on making this a short one because we're both tired. and shit. So we're gonna aim for like a 30-minute episode. We'll see. I mean, we're already at 7 minutes. Shit, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So number one question: you're out there hunting deer. What rifle are you using? What are you taking them with?
Well, this year, well, I had two rifles in my deer stand this year with me. Normally I have a 270 Winchester. It's a model 70 with the pre-64 action, which is what everybody wants. I actually bought it at Walmart years ago.
Oh, wow.
It's got a 10 by 40 by 50 millimeter, scope on it. And if you look up scopes, 50 millimeter means it's just a bigger, end on the scope. So it gathers more light. It's actually a varmint scope, but I shoot, like, my shortest shot, unless they walk up to me, is 100 yards. My longest shot is about 400 yards. So I have a varmint scope on my gun. I really don't need it, but it's kind of nice just to be able to zoom in the scope a little more. The other rifle I took was it's not a Winchester. It's a Remington Model 777. I just got it. It's a 30-06. Basically, oh, nice. they're about the same. A 270, a 30-06 are... They use the same casing, actually. All the 270 is just a neck down odd six case. They're in the same family. But you can't go wrong for hunting a whitetail with either one of those. I mean, it's going to put them down, you know, either way. You hunt just about everything in North America with those two rifles.
Right.
I use 150 grain ballistic tips. You know, that a ballistic tip opens up better. It's basically a hollow point with a plastic piece in the end.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they open up better. I have them in my 270 and my 30-06. I had just a regular soft nose lead bullet. But I actually shot a deer with my 30-06, which is brand new. It's the first deer I ever killed with that gun was this year. I got it last Christmas.
Oh, wow.
So I've only shot it a few times.
Nice. So the scope, you said it was a varmint scope. What did it run you? Because I've seen like people talk about some of their deer hunting rifles, and some of these rifles are, you know, with the scope and the rifle, we're talking about, you know, a few thousand dollars. And I know I can't afford that.
When I bought my 270, which was about 15 years ago, I paid $400 for it with the sling at Walmart, and it came with a crappy Simmons, just regular 3x9 scope. I bought the other scope. It's a Tasco. I bought it from Sportsman's Guide. I think I paid $150 for the scope. You know, the thing about deer hunting is it's as expensive or as cheap as, you know, you need it to be. You could buy, I've had that cheap scope on there for 15 years. The first year I took the other one off because it was crappy and put that one on. So I've had it for 14 years and it hasn't failed me yet. It hasn't, the gun hasn't wrecked it or anything. My 30-06 has still got the one that came with it because I just got it. It's just, I think it's a Simmons or something, you know, just a cheap scope.
Yeah.
But I mean, to buy a nice little nicer scope, if you don't have the funds, I recommend going to like Sportsman's Guide or something. I think they sell that Barska, they sell Tasco, and they sell, there was another one last time I looked on there. they're all good. I mean, if you want to, where you get in your high dollar scopes is at the end of the day, the very end, the clarity and stuff comes in that last few moments of light, really. You know, a $400 scope will gather a little more light. The optics are a little better. You know, that's where that money comes in. But if you're just going to go to the range and shoot targets and, you know, hunt once a year, $150 scope is perfectly fine. My gun, when I bought it all together, I had $550 in it, which that's right around anybody's price range.
Yeah. For a good hunting rifle, that's, yeah. I mean, oddly enough, the first gun I ever bought was a hunting rifle. It was a Browning Bar Safari. It had a really good scope on it, some other stuff, and I just wanted a gun, so I bought that. I ended up selling it a few years later to my stepdad, and he's gotten a few deers with it. So, you know, I was just shooting propane tanks and shit with it, and yeah. He's actually got deer with it, and he was very impressed with it. He didn't like the trigger. The trigger was too easy for him.
Yeah.
I loved it. I mean, the scope was awesome. I could hit anything with it. All right, so that's guns. If I was going to buy one now, which I think I have a Remington, maybe a 770, actually. It's a 30-06. It's all plastic polymer, you know, stock.
Yeah.
All black. And I've shot it a few times. The scope is a little off and weird. I got that, just borrowed it from my stepdad, but I've been borrowing it for like 2 years now, so it's mine.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's
my favorite.
30-06 is a, you know, perfectly, like I said, acceptable. You could shoot bear with it. You could shoot elk. You could shoot moose with it. I mean, there's nothing on the North American continent that you are not going to kill with a 30-06.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to buy 300 Win mags and 300 Weatherby mags and 338 Lepours. You don't need that stuff. You really don't. To hunt whitetails, they're not tougher than they were 30 years ago or when your granddad was shooting them with a 30-30.
Yeah. You know what? I've never seen the complete inability to find some 30-06. Every time I've gone to any store, usually there's a box. I mean, to the point that one time I was at a yard sale here, and motherfuckers, they had a couple boxes of 30-06 for sale for like, I don't know, $1.50 or something. And you know, the sure enough, the boxes looked like they came like out of the 70s, like bright, crazy, like 70s Technicolor, but they worked. I mean, they weren't corroded, they weren't damaged, they worked, and I paid like $1 for them or something.
Yeah. Well, the one thing you got to remember is every cartridge, well, not every cartridge, but like a lot of popular ones now, 308, 270, 280, there's a couple others. They're all based on a 30-06. 30-06 is their granddad. You know, I mean, a 308 is a cut down 30-06 casing that's re-necked to a 30 caliber. They're all the same. I mean, you can't really go wrong, but like you said, odd six, you go to the Walmart where I am here, you know how they lock ammo up at Walmart? They don't even lock the odd six up in the cabinet because there's so much of it. Like in the next few weeks, it'll be sitting on the shelf next to the shotgun shells, you know?
Yeah.
And, now that I have a 30-06, when they put that stuff on clearance, I'm going to buy a ton. Even though I reload, why not? You know, it's already made.
Yeah.
You could buy the cheap stuff for like $15 a box here. You know, it's dirt cheap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I mean, you can't go wrong with that either, that or a good 30-30 rifle. I mean, that stuff, you practically walk around here and you kick a 30-30 shell on the ground. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Everybody's got one in their closet, it seems like.
See, I can't remember what... A friend of mine, one time, he got his hands on like, what was it? An elephant rifle, maybe? It was super old and super weird. And they didn't make the ammunition for it anymore. Like, we had to track down some weird vintage surplus seller on the internet, and we found a box of ammo that was, oh my god, it was maybe $50 for 5 shells.
Oh wow!
Just because we were stupid, we wanted to like play with this, you know, rhino gun.
Yeah.
And the success, maybe it was. Anyway, it was a lot of money we paid on this like one little box of shells. Not all of them even worked either. Like, it was from, like, the 1920s or something. You know, these giant, like, fucking bazooka shells that go in this thing. And it was, like, single shot. Like, you put it in there, and then you close the breech.
Oh, and that was probably a Sharps. Probably a Sharps rifle.
Yeah, I don't know. And it was weird, too, because you'd pull the trigger, and there would be like a muzzle flash and a giant puff of smoke, and then it would knock the shit out of you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those were probably black powder shells. It probably was like a Sharps rifle or something like that. Well, just to tell you how old, you know, some of the rifles are around here, my friend's dad and his grandpa, they hunt with 30-40 Kregs that were military surplus. They haven't used a 30-40 Kreg since before probably 1905.
Oh, wow.
And they still buy shells for them. You can still buy 30-40 Kreg. And I think they have 45-70 governments, too. They have a couple of really old military surplus rifles that they still hunt deer with. I mean, those cartridges, when they were made, were black powder. they're still around. I mean, everybody gets too concerned about caliber. I saw a friend of mine shot a deer with a .22-250, which is right around .223 caliber.
Oh, wow.
Shot it right in the heart. I mean, dropped it like a sack of potatoes. I was standing there. I watched it when he did it. I mean, as long as you have good shot placement, I mean, it's not an issue. I wouldn't recommend a .22-250, but, you know, anything 27... You know, 270, 30-06, anything in there. I mean,
right.
It'll put one down.
All right. Now let's move on before we get too far off track. so what are some of your top picks and like the gear that you have to go out to hunt the deer? You know, the knife, the clothes, the scents. Like that's another one of those things where like it seems like a lot of new people new to hunting, they get caught up in the advertisement. And they're like, you got to have this, you got to have this. Like, what do you need? What do you need? What do you use?
Basically, you need, well, for me, you need Blaze Orange because it's the law here. You need a rifle, and you don't even need a deer stand. I was going to say a tree stand, but you don't even need a tree stand. The first time I ever went hunting with my dad, he bought me some Orange. I went hunting with him. He took my grandpa's old 12-gauge shotgun. And we went out in a cedar swamp, and we sat underneath some cedar trees, and that's how we hunted deer. I mean, there was no cover scent. There was no nothing. You know, my dad was an old-school deer hunter, and he always shot deer, you know. Cover scents and stuff, they're nice, and you know what? They make you a sloppy hunter, I think. As long as you're watching wind direction and stuff, that deer should never smell you. But the things I would recommend would be like a tree stand. I like hunting from tree stand. For one, deer don't look up that often unless they have a reason to look up. You know, like if you're up there and making a bunch of noise, they'll look up. But right. It's just safer, too. When you're shooting down into the ground. You know, you have less chance of if you shoot that bullet going off of your property and hitting someone. There's less of a chance. I would, you know, buy a climbing or tree stand or a ladder stand or something. I mean, you get them. The cheap ones, I think, are like $100-$150.
Yeah.
I have a deer mansion. I think I showed you the video of my wood stove in there.
Yeah.
But I made a bunch of ladder stands out of 2x4s. You know, I went to Menards, which is basically like a Home Depot here, And I bought 20-foot 2x4s, and I made a ladder stand with a pallet on the top, and that's what I hunted on for a long time.
Oh, wow.
It was, yeah, I just screwed it right to a big tree, and that was my deer stand. And, you know, pair of, like, Carhartt bibs, a good hunting jacket that'll keep you warm. I mean, that's really all that you need, a good knife, good gun and some bullets. You don't. There's not a lot you need. People overthink things. It's just like anything else. You don't need a lot of, you know, stuff. People like gadgets and gizmos and stuff, but you don't need a lot of stuff. You know, heck, our grandpas didn't have a lot of stuff. They just pretty much had what I told you, minus the blind, you know?
Yeah.
But a pop-up ground blind would be a good thing, or, you know, it just makes it easier. Then deer have awesome eyesight. They can see you just crazy. I had one bust me. I'm 20 feet up in the air through a window about the size of a laptop monitor, and he saw me move. It was looking right at my window, and it saw me move from that far away. And he was probably 30, 40 yards away. He just saw me move. He saw me pick up I think I picked up my binoculars and looked at my bait pile, and he saw me. I got busted this year. But, yeah, I mean, gear is, you know, cover sense and all that. I tried that. I mean, the buck lure, I never had any really good luck with it. I know people that have. I don't know. As long as you hunt where they're going to be, you don't need much. Hunting over bait is a kind of a fallacy too. I mean, I try to hunt where they're coming to the bait, you know. I hunt between me and the bait. That's what I try to do. Or the food plot, you know, if you catch them on the way there, you know, that helps too. Knife. I have an old, I think it's a case hunter that I had. A lot of times I used a buck folding knife. That's what I field dress my deer with. This year I bought a knife at the Prepper Expo in Seymour. I bought a Titan International. It's basically a bushcrafter knife, and I field dress my deer with that this year. It's pretty neat. I got to do a review on YouTube yet for it. I think I paid $60 for it. It was a nice knife. But I mean, yeah, I think my buck folder I bought that at Walmart, and I don't think they sell them anymore. But I've had that for 15 years, and I've used that for almost every deer until this year, and I paid $30 for it. You know, a good buck folding knife. It's hard to beat that. And Buck is awesome with their customer service. I broke the tip off it, sent it to them, and they sent me a one with a new blade in it back.
Nice.
And I can never get it as sharp as they get it.
Sharpening is not my biggest skill. Like, it's I'm not quite the best at it, but that's why
I can get it where it cuts paper, but I still haven't been able to get one where it shaves my arm yet. I don't know. Yeah, it's one of those things. Well, right now, I use diamond hones and stuff, and that's just to fix the edge up. But actually, I saw an interesting way to do it, and I saw it on Fat Guys in the Woods. Actually, it was pretty funny.
Oh, wow.
Take a magic marker, and the sharp part of your blade, you just color it with the marker, and then when you hit it with your stone, you could see where you're actually getting. It was an ingenious idea, I thought. And right now I use emery cloth. I have two different, a coarse emery cloth and then a super fine, like almost paper fine. And it gets pretty good. And I just got a thumbtack to a piece of 2x4, one on one side and one on the other. And it works pretty good for me.
So I a couple years ago, I bought a Work Sharp. It's a belt sharpener.
Yeah.
That actually works. When you get the hang for how to use it right, because I destroyed the shape of my Kershaw Skyline. Like, it's got a weird like belly in it now. Like, it's crazy. But once I got used to it, I could get stuff razor sharp really quick with it. And the other thing that I've had success with is automotive sandpaper.
Yeah.
Like all of the stones, the diamond stones, all of the Arkansas stones, I just ruined blades on them. I just ruined them on it. Sandpaper, every time I can get it, I can get shaving sharp with sandpaper, but no stones ever can I do anything with. It's weird.
That's basically the same thing with me. You know, emery cloth is, you know, stuff they use for polishing like hydraulic shafts and stuff like that, the super fine stuff. And I just take a couple of thumbtacks and have it on a piece of 2x4, and that's what I use. It's cloth backed, you know, so it's not paper backed, but it's basically the same stuff. And it comes in, you know, I think it's medium maybe the stuff I got is fine and then super fine. But basically the one is probably like 600 grit, and the other one's probably closer to 1,000 or 800. Like almost paper smooth, or your countertop. My countertop is about as coarse as that. Oh, wow. You know, I just got a regular old countertop. But yeah, it works. It worked pretty good. Now, they told me I'm not supposed to use something like a work sharp on that knife I bought because it's Damascus steel.
Ah.
They said. He said that it doesn't sharpen as good on that. That I'd be better off with something like what I have. I don't know if I'd buy another Damascus knife. It's nice and all, but I don't know. It's something more like you want to put on the wall than you should be carrying. Yeah. Although I got a horizontal, sheath now. Oh, I recommend that to anybody. I love it. Don't poke yourself when you sit down in your truck or sit down at home.
Oh, yeah.
The first one I ever had, I got with that knife. He gave me the choice. I said, I want to try a horizontal one. He gave me a horizontal sheath, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
I've always liked the look of them, but I've never had one. And I fucking, with my Buck Hoodlum, which is like, I don't know, I think an 11-inch long knife or something. Yeah, you gotta take it off when you sit down. You can't wear it when you're walking. You're fine, but if you go to sit down or anything, you just gotta take it off. It's just too long and just gets bunched up.
Right. Yeah, this one, you know, like I came home from hunting a few times and I sat down in my recliner and I was like, oh man, I'm still wearing. I put my hand by my side. I'm like, oh, I'm still wearing my knife. Oops. I don't need to be wearing this around the house.
Yeah, why not?
That was the weirdest part about going back to work is that I had spent a week and a half with my knife on my side, and I can't wear that knife to work.
Oh, no? Yeah.
I got to go back to my Gerber EAB, you know, small little knife that nobody, you know, worries about me killing him with.
I've got that actually in my hand right now because it was sitting on my table.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, I told the safety guy what, you know, I said, we work in a weld shop. If I wanted to kill someone, I mean, you think that not having my pocket knife is going to, you know, stop me? I have a grinder in steel. I can make anything I need.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone brought a machete into work and sharpened it, and then they forgot it. And oh my God, they lost their minds. It was right before deer season. So the dude was sharpening it to go clear a shooting lane or something. And they lost their minds about it. I'm like, you know how many of those you could just make here? A guy doesn't need to bring a machete to work to kill someone. He could just make one at work.
Yeah. The stupid bosses.
People nowadays are too paranoid.
Yeah, they really are. Hold on. So we're probably going to cut it out, but we mentioned that I work retail and just – fuck it. We already hit the 30-minute mark I wanted to stop at. Fuck it. So we do these like computer-based learning things. Like you got a computer and they give you like you watch videos and then you take a stupid test at the end on like different all kinds of crap. So I had to take the one on safety because they give it every year. You have to take the one on safety over every single year. For the past couple of years, it's been the same, so I know where this is going to go. But this year, it was different, and it updated, and it had an entire section on active shooter situations. And like, So I was actually doodling, drawing like a monkey on a piece of paper, not listening to the video at all. And they got to that. I was like, okay, I'm going to bash them. Like, how bad is this going to be? Like, is it going to be like pee yourself so you don't get raped? Is it going to be that bad? And actually I give them credit. Like the information they gave out that in that computer thing was actually pretty solid. Like they had gotten with a group from Texas on, you know, trying to defend people from active shooter situations. And they're like, okay, so first, you know, obviously they're assuming you're at work. You can't be armed. Obviously they want you to leave the area, keep the shooter from getting access to where you're at. And then they're like, by God, defend yourself tooth and nail. And I'm like, what? Badass. I expected them to say, you know, pee on the intruder so they get freaked out and run away. You know, like, they're like, no. You have a God-given right to defend yourself and a legal defense to defend yourself, so do it. So, I
give them credit for that. I give them credit for that, but you got to remember the dude that founded Walmart, he loved hunting and stuff. So, I mean, yeah, I could see it. Yeah. You know,
well, I mean, now they've ruined the company in the ground, but back to hunting. So you're in your deer stand, Jeff, and you catch the deer unaware. You take the shot. Now what do? The shot is good, by the way. Let's just assume that, you know, you weren't drinking too many brewskis and you shot way left and you ran away. No, you got a good shot. Now what do?
Well, more than likely, it's going to run. You know, that's just an inevitable thing. When you shoot a deer, when you look through the scope, if you shoot it and you don't blink your eyes when you shoot, you're going to know right away whether you hit it or not, most of the time. Like, if you shoot it and you see the deer jump, you know, more than likely you hit it. But if it stands there and looks around, yeah, probably not. Yeah, and it happens. I mean, every once in a while, you shoot a deer, and it's just like it looks around, like, oh, God. What happened? I've had it happen a couple of times when I shot one like super far away. You know, I shot it and it jumped. It kind of, you saw it like hunch, like almost like getting stung by a bee, and then it just looked around, and then it started running. You know, for a second, but. Yeah, more than likely you're going to have to track a deer a lot of times. And you might not have to track it far. But first thing you do is, well, make a note of where it was standing when you shot it. So you can go there and look for, you know, blood, hair, you know. I'll give you an indication. If you see a lot of hair and no blood, it was probably a bad shot. But if you see blood, like I saw, I waited for the deer that came out. There was some patches of snow in the field. And it just happened to walk it to where one of those patches of snow were when I shot it. So it was easy to find blood, but sometimes it's not easy. And if once you find blood, you just start following it. But like usually what I'll do is I'll go to where I shot the deer, look to see if there's blood, and then I go back to my deer stand. And I just let it, you know, have time to bleed out, because if the shot's not a perfect shot, sometimes it takes a little bit of time. You know, everybody's seen someone die in the movies. It takes a little bit. And that's no exception for deer. You give it a good 10, 15 minutes. If it's shot and hurt, it'll go find somewhere, lay down, and, you know, bleed out. That's what you want to do. But once you do that, you know, then you just start tracking it to where it goes. You try to, like I hunt, it's a field. So what I'll do is I'll remember where I shot it, and I'll try to remember where it went and hit the tree line and went into the trees, because usually it's not very far from there. And then got to track it and find it, and hopefully it's dead by then. If not, it could get up and run off. I mean, I've had that happen before, where I shot and it was gonna die. It's just I didn't wait long enough. So, yeah, it's important now. Now I usually give them at least 15 minutes to, you know, lay there and bleed out. And otherwise, you can – I've known people that kicked a deer up 2-3 times before it's died. A friend of mine did that. He chased it all the way across a 40-acre piece of property. Must have chased the deer up off of where it was laying down like 2-3 times.
Oh, wow.
And then that, you know, the hard part comes. Once you find it, you got to drag it out to wherever you're going to come and get it with your truck or four-wheeler or whatever. Right. A deer, once it's shot, more than if it runs, it'll go for heavy cover. Wherever it can, like, lay under a pine tree and die, or they'll crawl underneath a deadfall, you know, like if there was a clump of cedars that went down, they'll crawl underneath stuff to die. So sometimes finding it's not so easy.
Ah.
And then you got to field dress it. Now, that's kind of hard to explain.
yeah. I was going to sort of gloss over the whole, like, dressing of a deer in lieu of, like, I hear there's a really good YouTube, video that shows you how to do it. 'Cause it's one of those things that, you can listen to someone talk about it, but it's not going to make sense until you see someone, and possibly even until you do it yourself.
Right. One thing I would recommend if you're going to field dress a deer, they have those tools for you put it in
the
their
butt. Out.
Yeah. I have one of those, and I'll tell you what, I love it. That is one piece of, you know, that consumer gear I would recommend. I did it the other way for a long time, and once those came out, we tried it, and yeah, they're awesome. My buddy actually made something similar to that out of a piece of pipe. He sharpened a piece of pipe, and this was like a year or two before the butt out came out. Sharpen a piece of pipe, and it was so sharp that you put it around the butt and you twisted it, and it would cut all the way around the butthole. And it was a pretty interesting idea. And then, like, the next year, the butt out tool came out, and he just, forget this thing. I want that. It worked, but it didn't work great. I mean, it could have been refined, his idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is one thing I would recommend. And the other thing is don't puncture the stomach if you can help it. 'Cause once you puncture the stomach, a field dressing a deer becomes a bad day. You know, the stomach contents will make you want to throw up. So yeah, you have to be careful there. But other than that, I split the rib cage so I can reach up and get the windpipe. Some people don't. I'll separate the ribs from the sternum all the way up as high as I can. And other than that, you'll have to watch a YouTube video. There's a million of them. If it wouldn't have been so dark, I probably would have made one this year. You know,
right.
That's always good for views on YouTube. Something nice and graphic, like a field dressing a deer.
Oh, God. The vegans would yell at you. I've heard horror stories of people that, like, they'll put out, like, rabbit butchering videos, and then people will come out of the woodwork to just, like, trash talk them because they have nothing better to do.
Well, you got to remember, though, it's still views.
Yeah, you know. I saw the report that last month, I think I made 27 cents on YouTube. I'm like, wow, that's 27. I forgot they even had ads on there. I'm terrible about putting up new YouTube videos. And I think the last one we put up was Mike's tips on his turkey, which may or may not have gone to the Survival Punk page. I think I may have accidentally uploaded it so I have a personal page that I made years ago that has things like zombie makeup and crap. So it may have gone there. I'm not real positive, but yeah.
So yeah, I made a couple of videos actually for my deer stand. I took my Kindle up there with me, and I had a video and I was talking, and I'm holding it up with my hand because it's only got a forward facing camera. And behind me, you could see where the bait pile is. So I'm talking in the camera, and I tell them, by the way, I could see in the camera my bait pile right over my shoulder, and it's right here. And I stuck my finger up in the camera where my bait pile was. So I'm not just making a video. I'm still watching my bait pile, I said.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I did make a new, like, deer stand video, and one of these days I have to upload it to YouTube. So Yeah, then you'll get to see my wood burner again. Yes. Speaking of that, it was horrible. It was only the one time I had to quit putting wood in, and it was 80 degrees up there.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I was like, oh, man, it's getting hot in here. And I looked at the thermometer. I'm like, oh, my God, it's 80. I got shut. I had windows open, and it was it was like 30 outside, and it was 80 in my deer stand.
No, I was going to say, at 30, I would – I'm not sure if I'd even turn it on. Like, it's – I've got so right now I got a Mr. Heater portable buddy. Yeah, and a kerosene heater that I've not even had to turn on yet. So
well, the thing is sitting there you your hands get once your hands and feet get cold, you're cold, you know. And
I learned a trick for your feet getting cold, and I tried it. I've done it a few times. But I did it recently, and when I went to work, and the work temperature obviously is like normal temperature, it got so hot that like it felt like my feet were on fire.
Yeah.
And I got this off of a reader listener. You just sprinkle like the inside of your shoes with cayenne pepper.
Really?
Yeah, and the capsaicin powder in that like absorbs. It's just like getting like hot peppers on your hand, like the way your hands burn.
Huh,
happened to your feet.
Oh.
Yeah,
never,
that was like
I never crazy. Would have thought of that.
No, I I would have never thought of it, and they commented on it cuz normally I'm pretty comfortable, in like fairly low temperatures. Tennessee's fairly low, not Wisconsin fairly low. so like in my house, I'm okay with it being like, 55. 55 is a fairly comfortable temperature, except for like my feet get cold, like my feet will get cold a lot. And they're like, just put cayenne pepper in your shoes. And I did that. And I was like, unless you're going somewhere that is room temperature, amazing. If you do, your feet will like sweat and feel like they're on fire. So, but everywhere else. Yeah. Going hunting, I don't know. Like from a deer stand, that might be good. But if you're like, bow hunting on the ground, I'd only imagine they would smell that cayenne pepper, maybe. So,
yeah.
But otherwise,
maybe.
Cayenne pepper is a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll have to try that this winter. I'll have to try it out. I never heard of that.
The weird thing is, sure enough,
sitting in my deer stand like during the daytime when the sun's on it, that ain't bad. Because it painted it black, so it does gain heat in the day. But it's like right when the sun starts to drop, and it cools off fast. There's no insulation or anything in my deer stand. If it was insulated, it probably wouldn't even, all it is basically a wood box with windows. And, well, I got a steel roof on mine, but it's been up there I think 10 years now. I'm like 20 feet off the ground and on telephone poles. So when there's wind, it's cold up there.
Oh, I bet. So I only got two questions left. Let's knock this out so we're under an hour.
All right.
So do you process your own meat or do you take it to a processor?
This year, I actually, for the first year ever, I took it to a processor just because I don't have time. I have some cars to fix. I have some stuff to do, but usually I do cut it up myself, which it's not a big a deal as people make it out to be. Basically, you have, to take the hide off the deer, which that's not hard to do. And if you do it right away, it comes off like super easy. If you do it like the day you shoot it, the hide, basically you can pull on it, you cut it, and you can pull it right off. And you leave it a couple of days in the weather where I live. It gets tougher. It starts to freeze on there. But basically what I do is cut the hindquarters up in the steak. Take the inner tenderloin out, the outer tenderloin, just cut along the spine. And, you'll see it. It looks like almost a cow tenderloin when you're done. You take it out in one big piece. And any other, like the front shoulders, I'll turn that into some people make steaks out of it, and some of the bigger pieces I will, but most of that stuff gets cut up and turned into either jerky, or at that point I'll take like the scraps to the processor and they can make sticks and stuff like that. Right. Summer sausage, breakfast sausage. Oh, they even make
sausage so good.
They make venison bacon, which is basically venison with bacon mixed together. Oh yeah, they make everything here. You could get sticks with jalapeno in it and cheese, summer sausage that way. I mean, they're up here, it's like I said, there's a million things that you could get done. There's a lot of decisions if you take it to a processor. Basically, this year I told them to cut the steaks up, put them four to a package, and the back straps they cut and put four to a package, and make me some breakfast sausage so I could keep eating paleo. And I told them, you know, the rest making the hamburger, and I think I'll take my jerky cannon and make a venison jerky maybe. You know, that's,
I had one of those. I think I got rid of it when I moved, but yeah, I had one of those, like a giant cock gun, and you squeeze it and it makes like strips of, yeah. That was the easiest way I found when I first started making jerky. Cause you know, I'm lazy. I like to do everything the lazy way. Right. Instead of like finding meat that was lean enough and then slicing it, I would get the ultra lean, hamburger meat and just squeeze through that thing and just, God, I think at the time, I may have first started doing it in the oven, you know, like on the warm with the door cracked open. And yeah, it made great meat sticks.
Right. Yeah, the like venison hamburger is way leaner than any, beef that you're going to buy. It's venison super lean. You actually, if you want to make hamburgers with it, you almost have to add like pork sausage or beef to it just to make it so that it stays together and it's, you know, greasy enough to cook. It's if you brown venison hamburger, there's almost no fat that comes out of it. So I mean, for jerky, I mean, it's, you know, that's probably what I'll use it for. My wife isn't big on eating venison anymore because when they were younger, they were poor and they ate a lot of venison. So yeah, she could take it or leave it. So a lot of times, if it's steak, I'll make venison steak and take it to work or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Like processing, like just to cut a deer up here is like $70. You save $70 doing it yourself, and then making sausage is extra. They charge. Yeah. I don't remember. Was $3. I think it's $2 or $3 a pound or whatever, once they add pork to it to make like breakfast sausage, something like that.
Wow.
There's a whole price list. Every year I've done it myself. This is, like I said, the first time I've actually taken it. And I have a friend that makes his own sausage. He's crazy. that's like so much work, but he makes awesome sausage. He took his to the processor and told him, I just want the scraps back in a bag. Don't grind it up or nothing. I'll do that, he said. He's got an industrial meat grinder and all kinds of stuff. Meat mixer and sausage stuffers. And I'm like, I don't have that kind of time, man.
I've made fresh sausage where you just, like, I just got some ground pork, you know, with nothing in it. And I added the spices and seasonings with no preservative, so obviously it would be paleo friendly. You know, it was just like salt and pepper and white pepper, actually. Maybe it's on the blog. You know, and sage and some other stuff, and you just mix it, let it cure for a couple hours, and then you can just pound out like little patties of it, and you've got breakfast sausage. You know, that lasts, you know, about a week, but you know, a pound of sausage, it lasts you about a week. I mean, I go through it. I could go through it in a week or a day or whatever. And that way I don't have sugars or any other crap added to it. It's just like, you know, meat and seasonings.
Right. Yeah, he's like got the stainless steel mixer. You know, I think you buy them at Cabela's where it mixes, I don't remember how many pounds of meat at a time, but it's like a commercial one. And it had a hand crank, and he got sick of that, so he made an adapter for his DeWalt drill. So he sticks the meat in there with his drill and mixes all the spices up and stuff. Like I said, he's really super serious into it, so, you know. But, yeah, it's one of those things. It can be as simple or as complicated as you want it to be.
Yeah. You know,
that's like the theme with hunting or almost anything, really.
Everything, yeah. That was my motto when I was a home brewer was it could be as simple or as complicated and as cheap and as expensive as you want. And I mean, I'm pretty sure if I'd had you come down when I had when I was still brewing and had some brew beer at the house, you wouldn't have turned your nose up to it. You would have knocked back. And I, for cheapness, I'd always bottle in 2-liter bottles because they were made to hold the pressure. So I would just have like a closet full of like 11 2-liter bottles filled with beer. Just carry around a 2-liter bottle of usually. I think my best beer I ever brewed was a blueberry wheat beer. Oh, it was so good. You know, a little fancy, but normally I just sort of dark stout beers. And the blueberry one made the lightest.
There's a micro brewery around here. They make blueberry beer. That place is pretty interesting. They used to have a few breweries in Marinette and Menominee, which is 30 miles from me, and they had their own beer. Well, this microbrew came up and then actually bought the recipes from people that used to own it, their descendants. Now they're brewing beers from around 1900-ish. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
So I can have a Silver Cream, you know, same beer that my great grandpa could have drank. You know what I mean? That's pretty cool. But yeah, everything, you know, that like even in prepping and survival, I mean, you see people with all that stuff. It's like, you know, if you just have a little bit of knowledge, you don't need so much stuff.
Like the $250 like stop tube medical kit with stuff that you have no idea how to use because you're not a paramedic.
Right. Yeah. That kit. Yeah. You know, basically like, If I cut with my firewood stuff, when I cut wood, I have stuff in my truck. And basically, besides a roll of toilet paper and a roll of duct tape, because if it gets worse than that, I'm in deep shit. You know, if I'm out in the woods and it's worse than duct tape and toilet paper can fix, I'm in deep shit. I thought about throwing Quick Clot in my truck because that could be handy. But, you know, I think they have to surgically remove Quick Clot. I don't know if I'm all for that.
You're supposed to let the people know that it's in there. I know that. But I have one last question, and then we'll wrap this up and head to bed, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. So you, I think you showed me a news article on how I think it was in Wisconsin that a lot of hunters are going home empty-handed from hunting, but not you. So what makes you successful when others are not?
Well, a lot of times it has to do with your area. Like where I hunt, a lot of the landowners around me, they practice that quality deer management where they actively manage the herd. They have rules like nothing smaller than a 6-pointer can be shot unless it's a one with like a deformed rack. For a long time, they were no does whatsoever, but they've kind of come to the realization now with that quality deer management that you have to shoot some does, otherwise you get an overpopulation. In my area there, you know, there's a block of, my dad owns 80 acres. The neighbor, I think he owns couple hundred acres. There's a couple of other 40s around us, and you know, everybody's kind of on the same page there in that way. So that helps. But when you get people that come up here or people that live here and they, you know, first thing they see, if it's brown, it's down. that really hurts your hunting. Like the one property we have, which is the one I was just talking about, it's 6 miles from the other one, but they're on opposite sides of that road I was talking about.
Yeah.
If you go to that other one that's on the other side of the road, it's very hard to get a deer because there's more cabins with, you know, people from the city, and they want to, you know, everybody wants to shoot their deer, and they'll sit in their cabin, and the first thing they see, they shoot. And it comes down to management, really. Like I said, I hunt in a good managed area. I did have to hunt in that other area to shoot my deer, and it was tougher, but when I sat in my deer stand, I see 8 to 12 deer a day, at least. And the other one, well, I see a couple here or there. So there's a big difference. It's only 6 miles. But like I said, there's a lot less hunting pressure where I hunt most of the time. But yeah, that's the one part they ran bonus tags for years. They've been giving like an extra doe tag for almost 20 years now, I think. And they wonder why nobody's shooting any deer in that area anymore. But they're like, well, we need to call the herd, so give out more bonus tags. You know, it's government at its finest. You know, well, we can't. God. People aren't shooting enough deer, so let's give them more free tags. You know,
my God.
You know, well, you know how government is.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago that the hunters were so pissed that they were writing letters to our governor, and the governor went to the Department of Natural Resources and actually had a committee formed to look into what they were doing, and they fired the people that were responsible for trying to manage the deer herd. That's how bad it got. Yeah, the government official actually screwed themselves out of a job by, you know, giving away free stuff, which is amazing. But yeah, I guess that goes to show you, I guess, how serious hunting is here, that you'll write a letter to the governor bitching that the Wisconsin DNR isn't doing their job. But yeah, that's actually what happened, and they hired some guy from Texas to come up here to advise them how to manage their deer. So and don't forget a good dose of luck. There's always a good dose of luck, but you got to scout around. You got to put some legwork in. You can't just walk out there and I did a few episodes up to deer season about deer hunting on my podcast. So, you know, if anybody wants to check them out, they can. Unfortunately, the one right before Wisconsin deer season, something happened to the audio. It's horrible. Audacity. Yeah. I put in a couple of songs and stuff, and when I leveled it or whatever, Audacity made it really tingy. I didn't even know. Someone said, I can't even listen to that episode. What happened? So,
yeah. Now that I don't have a fan going and I don't have a mic anymore, and using the laptop's microphone, it has that little like echo quality. I don't really care for that. I may like embed like a soft background music or some crap, or just buy another fucking microphone. Something.
Yeah. Like right now when I'm talking to you, I got my Kindle with the earbuds in, so that's not too bad, and I'm in a house full of crap. But yeah, most of the time my audio is not that great anyway. Yours is always better than mine because I'm driving down the road. This is rare for me to be sitting in my kitchen, and I should do it more, but I don't.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you do it when you have time, and you put out, what are you on, 100 or 200 now?
217, I think.
Yeah.
I gotta get one up this week yet. But I've been doing two a week now for the last month or two. So I have so many. I have enough podcasts recorded ahead of time. I could probably go to the end of the year without recording another one. But I get an idea and I'm like, oh, I want to put that one first. And the other ones get shoved off to the back.
Oh, yeah. Well, shit, why don't you just throw out two a week and then
And then fuck, you'll bump your numbers up.
Yeah, I'm gonna start doing that. What I want to do is I think one eventually once I get to my backlog of podcasts done, I want to do one from the truck and then maybe one from home if I can manage that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just I want to do interviews and stuff. I just haven't gotten to it. I still haven't figured out how to use my bootleg version of Pamela.
Oh my God. Pamela it's ninjas are just attacking you right now.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, let's wrap this up at the short episode of 100 or 1 hour and 1 minute long.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I got a commercial for you for the Survival Punk Army. But guys, join the Survival Punk Army. I gave James money for his podcast because I like it so much. I am a member of the Survival Punk Army. So just remember, the Survival Punk Army wants you. You know.
Hells yeah.
Yeah.
And thanks again for that, Jeff.
Yeah, no problem. Like I said, I could give you the money or I could give it to Spearco. Who needs the money more, really?
Yeah. I actually just canceled mine because I realized it was coming up for renewal like this month. I was like, oh shit, I don't have the money for that. I'm broke.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, the last time I even logged in was to like see what his back end looked like so I could use it for the Survival Punk Army.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing, you know, is that we got to look out for each other, you know, because, you know, he doesn't need our money. If I'm going to spend that money, I might as well give it to someone who's hasn't, you know, made it, I guess, is not the right word, but I guess
right.
The only
I'm not
word.
Quite making six figures a year on Survival Punk. Although,
oh, God.
The recent changes I did with Google AdSense, I went from making 3 cents a day to making, like, on average, $2 a day. With one day, like, so I think before, like, my biggest day usually was like maybe $1 in the past year. And then I had one day a couple weeks ago where I hit $11 in a day. I'm like, sweet Jesus. So instead of getting a $100 check like once a year, I'll be getting one like maybe every month or so. So
oh, man.
An extra 100, I won't say no to that.
I'm going to have to make you fix my website.
I'll talk to you offline about it, or not offline because I'm going to hang up and go to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm going to publish this episode tomorrow. But no, it was literally just – it was one plug-in. I took my Google Ad things, and then I installed this plug-in, and then I dropped the code in two spots on this one plug-in, and then it did the work for me. Instant, like literally maybe 30 minutes worth of work, and that was with research. So, you know, like me telling you how to do it would be like – 15 minutes worth of work to, you know, grow profits by a couple 100%, like
yeah,
that.
Can't kick on that.
Yeah. So, but with that, it's been great having you on again, Jeff. I have learned a few things about hunting. Hopefully some of the noob listeners in the audience have learned a thing or two about hunting. So yeah, you have been.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anybody has any questions, they can email me. I'll answer them at jeff@lostskillspodcast.com.
And make sure you listen to Jeff's podcast at thelostskillpodcast.com. He does a lot of good ones. He name shouts us a few times. We name him a few times. But it's good tool-based. Have you noticed that the Save Our Skills guys, which sold out to a new guy, is now like putting out daily updates?
Yeah. I noticed that. It's still in my RSS feed.
I actually keep meaning to unsubscribe. I'm like, I'm sorry, guys, but your languishing death just kind of turned me off. I don't know if I'm willing to give you a second chance.
Yeah, that was the whole reason I started my podcast. I was disappointed. I was like, well, hell with it. If no one's going to build it, I will.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I did.
All right.
But yeah. Yeah, definitely. I refer to Mike as Couch Potato, what's his name now, on my podcast.
Yeah, he came back for one episode. And to be honest, that Thanksgiving episode we did, I thought we nailed it. Like that, we did a cooking episode because I didn't want to make it time dated. But we were both like, we were both on Adrafinil, so we were like spot on, like timing and stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a good episode. You guys should make a cookbook and put it on Kindle.
You know what? I've kicked around the idea, and I definitely want. I think I'm gonna write an ebook on the one skillet mastery. So I do almost all my cooking now in one single skillet, and you know, it's like knock your socks off, like drop your panties, amazing food. So
guys definitely. Definitely should. I listened to that episode. That was the first thing I thought of. They need a cookbook, a survival punk cookbook. Cooking with survival punk.
Yeah. I think Mike wanted to do a YouTube series where he basically goes out in the woods and shows you like the wrong thing to do. And then I'll voice over like, this is what you should have done in this situation. Don't eat the poisonous toadstools. Don't be like Mike. Don't die.
That would be
like
awesome.
Like, he'd be like Kitty. He would die every single episode.
That would be a good series. I'd watch it.
Yeah, so we're probably going to do that. At least a few episodes just for fun. We're both half dead here.
Yeah.
It's good having fun, Jeff. Welcome back,
problem.
Of course, anytime.
Yeah, I love coming on your show. It's awesome. And don't discount yourself on your single shows. You do a good job, even though, you know, my liver was screaming after the second one.
Yeah, yeah. You get a drink every time I say
I'm from Wisconsin. I can take it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. All right. Talk to you later, Jeff.
Yep, no problem. Thanks for having me on.